Well, hello to everyone. And this is Angela Thorne, and I'm filling in for Reverend Charisse Thorne, the creator of Knowing Spirit. Charisse has written a book outlining her beliefs and her experiences and how she came to heal her soul through Knowing Spirit. She calls her temple Knowing Spirit because of this great experience that she has had. We welcome today our guest, Asha Pavar, and she will speak to us about her experiences in knowing Swami Kriyananda. We have also Levon Fellharber, who has been our co-host for weeks and weeks now. Welcome, Levon.
Hi.
Okay. We have some telephone numbers that we would like to give out before we speak a little bit with Levon and before we connect with Asha Pavar. Okay. The telephone numbers would be 888-228-4494, and that would be for U.S. and Canada. These are toll-free numbers. The telephone number again, U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. Worldwide would be 877-489-6350. 877-489-6350. Okay, we also have some direct numbers, but we'll start off with these two for now. Please give us a call if you have any questions for our guest or for Levon or for Angela. Thank you so much. Levon, I'd like you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Okay.
Briefly, I know they probably know much about you since you have been on for quite a few weeks now, but if you could just briefly let our listeners know, you know, what you're all about.
Okay. I'm Levon Fellharber. I'm from Minnesota, and I am, maybe 6 years into this mindset, and I'm really enjoying it. It's quite different than what I used to believe, but I realize everything that I did up to 6 years ago was to prepare me for what I've really come here to do. And one, I've learned that one of my main healing gifts is my word, my voice. So that's one reason I believe I'm on the radio. Plus, I have other gifts of healing, but that's basically who I am.
Okay. Well, that sounds like great news. We need the word. And from my philosophy and from the works that I have been doing, and the messages that I have been receiving through all that is, the word has become a very profound and meaningful word to me. Right now, I'd like to introduce Asha Pavar. Asha, are you there?
I'm right here, Angela.
Okay. How would you like us to address you, Asha?
Oh, I just go by my first name. Simple enough, Asha.
Okay, great. We had an interesting little difficulty there this morning, but everything seems to be running very smoothly now, and maybe it's because of your beautiful energy. What do you say about that?
Well, something caused it to go off, too, but I'll take the credit for the good if you want.
Okay, that sounds positive to me. I like to dwell in the positive. No point in dwelling on what goes wrong, unless we can actually learn from it.
Yes.
That is how I prefer to see things. If we can learn from it, then it is still great, even though it may seem to be a little bit on the negative side to begin with. Okay. You have come from the lineage, so to speak, of Paramahansa Yogananda.
Yes, exactly. For many years, I've been a student, a very close student of Swami Kriyananda, who's a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda. Yogananda wrote the book, Autobiography of a Yogi, which of course is one of the most influential spiritual books in existence now.
Yes. Okay. Swami Kriyananda was his disciple.
Yes. Yogananda was one of the first great Indian masters to come and make his life in the West. He came to America from India in 1920 at a time when all of this was more called New Thought than anything else, and he brought teachings of meditation and Kriya Yoga and a great deal of what has become almost, you know, has become very well known. But when Yogananda came to America, it was really a revolution that he was bringing, the first foray between East and West. And Yogananda settled in Los Angeles for 30-some years. He died in 1952. And during that time, he trained a number of disciples, you know, many hundreds of disciples, really. And one of the most prominent was an American man named Donald Walters, who later took the name Swami Kriyananda. Kriyananda is now himself 81 years old, but in all the years that he's been a disciple, 60 next year, he has continued to serve Yogananda's work. And Kriyananda started communities first in California, now there are several around the world, based on the teachings of Yogananda, on the principles of meditation, the practice of Kriya Yoga. And essentially, like, what would life look like? What would a whole alternate society look like if we took the basic teaching that the purpose of life is to realize spirit, to be a channel for spirit? How would we earn money? How would we relate to our husbands and wives? How would we raise our children? Just what would all of life be? And that movement started in the late 60s. I joined very early on and helped start a couple of these communities myself. And that's pretty much what I've done with my whole life now. Now I've written a book about all those experiences, Swami Kriyananda as we have known him, and that's what brings me to your show today.
Yes, and it is indeed a very, very great book to read. I have really enjoyed it. I have had the opportunity of reading it since I am presently, you know, in the same locality as my daughter is. And I have truly enjoyed it. It seems as though he was very well honored by most of his, or by all of his disciples, or all of his, how would you call those who may not have followed his path completely, but who were participating in his teachings? Are they also called disciples?
Well, Kriyananda's own approach to all of it is just to call everyone a friend. He's a true teacher in a way that we really rarely see these days, which is his concern is not at all with his own position, but entirely simply with what he can do for people. In fact, the whole book is a collection of stories. It's just start to finish, just one story after another. After some effort of meditation and different ways of trying to think how to really convey his life properly, there's already another biography of him called Faith is My Armor, which is more chronological. So I decided to write a biography based on his effect on the people he came in contact with. So it's just first-hand accounts, my own and accounts of many people that I interviewed, just written up in their own words of, this is my experience of this person. And so seeing someone through the eyes of how people have experienced him, it's a very easily accessible way to understand these principles. And one of the stories in there is Swami Kriyananda himself during the time when there were a lot of American gurus, and there was it wasn't all well received. It was a sort of a mixed bag of a scene. And I jokingly said to him, you know, if you would just take more pomp and circumstance in your life, it would be more impressive to people. I was just being humorous. But he answered me very seriously, and he just said quite simply, he said, I feel I can do more for people as a simple, unaffected friend than in any other role. And that's really the only role he's ever taken. Many of us, of course, have related to him as our spiritual teacher. And he himself also gives all credit to his own guru. He has no wish to replace Paramhansa Yogananda, but he simply stands as a messenger. But in the end, by approaching it from that point of view, it's almost as if he becomes more of an expression of the teachings he's trying to share with us, of humility and wisdom and deference to wisdom when you meet it.
Yes, that is the word that came to my mind right away, wisdom. I can actually feel his essence through some of these messages here, or through some of these stories. And he seems to be a real humble entity or personality on this earth plane. And I can understand his philosophy. I find too many times we worship rather than pay attention to the teachings of the great masters, and therefore we lose the message that they are trying to give to us through our tendency to worship rather than to try to walk the path of their teachings.
You know, it's a very fine line, Angela, because I met Swami Kriyananda in 1969. There was something in his magnetism that caused me instantly, and I mean that literally, it was less than a minute, I had a sense that his consciousness was the consciousness that I wanted to have. And I made a very direct bond with the power of spirit coming through him. And then all these it's not quite 40 years, but it's been a long time, my life has been defined by continuing to learn from him. And there has to be sufficient respect to be receptive, because, you know, we're strong-minded people, Americans in general, and speaking for myself in particular. I'm not one who takes other people's words basically for anything. At the same time, when you are consistently in the company of someone, I want to use the word, who can always trump me, but not that he ever goes at it in that direction. It's just that when I sincerely ask questions, over years and years, I've been continually amazed by the breadth of his understanding. But as soon as that turns to any kind of hero worship, then immediately you've stepped outside of what he's actually teaching. Because what he's actually teaching is the kingdom of God is within, and that which I do, ye shall do, and greater things, the things that Jesus said in the Bible, which is that it's about what our own potential is. But a little help from a friend can really help us realize that potential. That's what I've tried to put out in this book, this Swami Kriyananda as we have known him, to help people understand that there is a place for a teacher in your life, but the teacher has to be genuine, and the student or disciple, the devotee, however you call him or her, has to also approach it from the right angle, or else the whole relationship doesn't end up where you want it to be.
I totally agree with you, and I thank you very much for sharing that. And that answers the prelude that I started with. So thank you. You answered that very greatly, to support that theory. Unless we can really relate and we are receptive, we lose the actual teachings.
Yes.
And thank you. Thank you very much for saying that. How has his teachings changed your life?
Well, I've always been a very strong-minded person, and I was raised in a Jewish household, and the characteristic of Jewish people often is that we think for ourselves. You know, we're not inclined to just follow the herd, but to think on our own. And yet at the same time, and I was, outstanding in the ways that young people can be. I didn't have that much of a life, so I didn't really prove myself. But at the same time, I was always inwardly aware of the limits of my own understanding. Even though I could, for example, be superior in school, I didn't really feel that I had a solid grip on what I would call very simply the keys to happiness, or an understanding of what the overall purpose of life was. And for me, all the other potentialities seemed very unimportant compared to that truth. And I started reading outside of the Western culture. I started reading books from India, Vivekananda, the Bhagavad Gita, but I couldn't figure out how you took these high ideals. Let's say that realizing spirit is the goal of life. Let's say that happiness comes from inner attunement. But I just couldn't figure out what the life would actually look like. And even when I read books about great saints or great figures, I could never relate the circumstances of their lives to mine, and I still felt bewildered. When I met Swami Kriyananda, he was 40 years old. He was living on his own in San Francisco. He had just purchased some land in the Sierra Nevada in California. He was starting a cooperative community out in the country. It was a very radical venture. He was presenting himself as the disciple of this great Indian master whose book I had read, but I hadn't really tuned into it much at all. I had tried to read. I hadn't read it successfully. But he stood in front of me, and I could feel his intelligence. I could feel his integrity. I could feel, above all, I could just feel this limitless joy. And I felt that it was his consciousness was a deliberate act of disciplined will on his part, that it wasn't just chance, it wasn't that he was just lucky, that it was really something he was doing. And he said, and I knew in principle it was true, that what he was doing he could transfer, that it was a matter of principle and discipline and practices and not just a matter of luck. And that to me was just like, it was like manna from heaven, really, literally. Because this is what I'd been asking all my teachers, every wise, so-called wise or semi-wise person in my life: how do you be happy? And no one could ever really answer that question. And Swami Kriyananda answered it very directly by attuning yourself to the inner power of spirit within, by meditating, by serving others, by seeing the divine in all. And it was sort of like the whole of my life just fell into order. It was like I was a puppet in chaos. I mean, like a marionette, you know, with the strings all tangled, but you pick it up from the right string and then everything falls into order. And it wasn't as if, I mean, it's true that I've lived my life in cooperative communities and I've worked for the cause of Yogananda's teachings and Kriyananda's teachings all my life. But I've traveled, I have a lovely home, I have a beautiful husband, I've done many interesting things. I haven't abandoned, I've maintained relationships with my family. I haven't abandoned anything that was dear to me. I just put it all in the center of a much bigger whole. And so what I would say in very simple terms is that by studying and attuning myself to the teachings of Yogananda through Kriyananda, I've made my life work. It's instead of being a random hope, it's become a very deliberate progression, you know, from when I was 22 to today when I'm 60 years old. The other side of it, which I think is very interesting, a young person asked me once, "Are you happy?" And I responded, "Very few people will admit they're unhappy. You know, people like to say I'm happy no matter what." I said, "But what I would say is that I had very high ideals in my youth. And those ideals have only expanded, and I've never had to compromise them." And I think that's a very unusual thing to be able to say, to be able to look back on your life and say, I fulfilled the dream that I had for my life, for my own understanding and for serving others, and I owe all that to the teachings of Swami Kriyananda.
Oh, that's wonderful, wonderful. You said when you were speaking that this type of consciousness can be transferred, if I remember correctly. Am I using the right words? What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, let me give you a couple of examples from the book, very simply. This world is not a physical world. It appears to be, but it isn't. You know, the scientists talk about that all the time. There's one example, the first story in my book. It's very simple. I happened to be with Swami Kriyananda and my husband and I. We were vacationing, as it was, in Europe. We were in a hotel, and there was a little shop right off the lobby, and it was the off-season. There was almost no one in the hotel, and this woman used to just sit in that shop day after day, and almost no customers came in. Swamiji saw her there, and we walked into the room, and he just went in to see her. There was nothing in the shop that interested him. He started asking her. He said, "You know, almost no one comes into the shop, and yet you sit here all day. what do you do? She said, oh, I read, I do a little work. And then just very simply, he said to her, it must be lonely. And it was the most astonishing thing because the woman seemed so surprised that anyone had noticed her or that anyone cared as deeply about her consciousness, and he was a perfect stranger to her. And first she tried to say it wasn't, but then she just admitted very frankly, yes, it is lonely. And then I was standing right next to Swami between him and this woman, and I felt, literally, I felt this energy just going out from him. And it was his own inner joy, and you could see it. It reached me, and I could feel it reach her. And this suddenly, this wonderful happiness came into her face. That's the only way I can describe it. And she looked so uplifted. And they just stood there in silence for a few moments. And you could see her whole demeanor shifted. And then he just said, well, it's nice to talk to you. And he walked out of the room. And that was all there was to it. But from then on, her whole manner was completely different every time she saw him. She just seemed so... It's like it takes so little for someone just to acknowledge who we are and what we need. And because of the broadness of his consciousness, he can do that. On another occasion, a man tells the story of, he asked Swamiji to bless him. He had just met Swami and he wanted him to be blessed. And the man knelt in front of Swami. Swami doesn't do this that often, but he did now. And he touched the man at the spiritual eye. And just with that touch, the man describes, I write this in the book, how all of a sudden this, as he described it, it was like he was looking at a horizon line with the sun coming up right underneath the horizon, and this bursting light just came up into his consciousness. And he said he forgot where he was. He forgot that he was with anyone. He forgot who he was. Everything just became that light. And for a timeless zone, he sat like that. And then Swami withdrew his finger, and then at that point his consciousness went back to normal. It's just like these energies that are our consciousness. There's no borders between us if we know how to give that across. I mean, just think of all of us do that. Sometimes somebody is sick and you come in and comfort them. It's a question simply of, is there any limit to how much consciousness can be transferred? And the great masters say, no, there's no limit. It's only a question of how broad our own consciousness is.
Yeah, and therefore who we are becomes our consciousness.
Exactly. In the Bible it says, Jesus put it very simply, as many as received him. John put it about Jesus, as many as received him. That the limitation was not in the consciousness of the Great Ones. It's in the size of our cup, so to speak. And it's not always terribly mysterious. Another story I tell in the book, there's this lovely woman, her name was Happy, as it were. She had contracted HIV and then got AIDS from a blood transfusion. And she came down with meningitis. The whole story I tell, but let's just say she was in the hospital. It was very chaotic. She was so close to death that they didn't even have time to take her out of the emergency room. And her veins had collapsed. They couldn't get an IV into her. A lot of her friends were there. They were sort of trying to give her a visualization to go out through the tunnel of light because she seemed to be dying. Her appendages started dying, and she started turning purple in her hands and feet, and her nose started turning purple, and the doctors and the nurses were frantic all around her. And somebody called Swamiji, and he came to the hospital immediately, and he sat down right next to her. He looked at her, and there was all this chaos. And he looked at her, and her nose was this bright bulbous purple. And he said to her right out loud, he said, Happy, you look just like Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer. And it was such a sort of ridiculous remark in the middle of all that anxiety about saving her life. Suddenly she, too, it just lost all her tension. And she, as she put it, she somehow found the energy to laugh. And when she began to laugh, she said the entire room just suddenly went still and silent. And everybody just, as she put it, just exhaled, you know. There's no point for fear. You know, she is ill. Maybe she will die. But all of this anxiety and tension is completely useless. And then she said, just in that moment, everything turned around. The IV, they were able to insert the IV. They started giving her liquids. Her blood pressure started going up. The doctor suddenly felt he had a grasp on the situation. And all Swamiji had done was just calmly walk into the middle of a situation of tension and diffuse the tension with just a little lighthearted reminder that life is just a dream. We don't have to worry. No one else would have had the courage or the insight to do that, or perhaps not, but he did. And then she recovered from the whole incident.
Wow. Yes, I have the book opened, and there is a really short story here from someone by the name of Karen G.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it's based on the fact that Swami Kriyananda was at a whole life expo, and one of the people there, I guess, who can read auras and or see auras, etc., was wondering who was this gentleman in this white jacket. She felt so amazed, and to make the story even shorter, she said that I have never seen an aura anything like that before. That soul is very rare on this earth.
Yes.
He lives only to do God's will. And that captivated me when I heard about that. And I think it is a reminder for everyone that who we are really shows up within our consciousness. It touches everything. We may not be aware of it, but it is out there for all to see, for those who can see it, and for all to feel, those who are ready to feel. And I think this is a really great indication of hope for many of us and many of others who maybe are seeking to know the true self that we are, to understand that when we strive to really come from that self and we strive to come from the peace and joy that we really are, we are touching so many others.
Oh, it's such a beautiful way to think about it, and that's what I've learned from Swamiji. He just goes through life and he has one intention, which is how can I help? And he doesn't make any pretenses about himself. He doesn't make any wild promises. He just says, how can I help? And of course, that's a very emulatable attitude. You know, he may be able to help on a level perhaps that I can't help on, but I can still say in every circumstances that I'm in, how can I help? And that also means how can I help myself? I mean, it's just we're all important in God's eyes. One self is not less important than others. I know Swami has always been so extremely realistic about that. One of the reasons of the success of our communities is that it's just that we value one another and we value ourselves also. Just live sensibly, but let's live in the Spirit of God.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Living in the Spirit of God means what to you, Papa?
One of the wonderful teachings of the Indian teaching is they speak of, you know, in English, the word God is not a specific word. It actually, if you think about it, really has no meaning until you attach somebody's dogma to it or somebody's idea. Oftentimes people have come, I run a teaching center for Ananda in Palo Alto, California, and Ananda is our organization. And people come to me and they say they're atheists. And then I ask them, what form of God have you rejected? And what they've rejected generally is somebody's idea about God that was probably eminently rejectable. But in the Indian teachings, they talk about God as an experience, and they give that experience specific names, specifically eight names: love, peace, joy, calmness, wisdom, energy, light, sound. So these are wonderful qualities that we can all experience. And my understanding of how to be an instrument of God into the world is simply to be an instrument of one of those qualities. Sometimes more than one at a time, but always one or another. You know, sometimes I can't always be energetic, but at least I can be peaceful. Sometimes I can't be calm, but I can at least be energetic. Sometimes I'm not very joyful, but at least I can be loving. Or I can't be very loving, but at least I can be joyful. And what that's what I've seen in Swami Kriyananda's life is just the simple manifestation. One example was once a friend was in a position to remove some money from one of Ananda's bank accounts. And it was a dear friend, and the man took the money, not entirely as a thief, because he had it justified in his mind what he was doing. It was not clear reasoning, but in his own mind he thought he was doing the right thing. And it was a substantial enough sum, and it was in the early days of Ananda when money was very short. Money's still short, but it was even shorter then. But he, others brought the issue to Swamiji, what should we do? And Swamiji said, almost everyone puts money above friendship. He said, I value friendship more than money. And then he said more. He said, if that money is ours, it will be returned to us, if not by him, then by some other source. He said, there's no point in trying to reason with him. He won't understand. He said, just let him have it. And it was such a beautiful example of the fact that you can't force people to be wiser than they are. You can't just order them to understand what they don't understand. And sometimes for the sake of friendship, you have to just sacrifice. And in time, as it happened, actually, the man came around and did return the money. But he never would have if we had humiliated him or shamed him by chastising him at a time when he didn't understand. I know on another occasion, Swami Kriyananda was out of the country and someone did something very unwise. He used his position in a way that he shouldn't have. And a couple of people got very judgmental and confronted the man. And the man was very proud. And even though he'd done wrong, he refused to admit it because he had too much pride. And the only recourse he had was to say that everyone else was wrong. And by the time Swami returned from being out of the country, the situation had deteriorated terribly. And Swami was very he was very frustrated. Not with the man who'd erred, because weakness is part of human nature, but he was very frustrated with those who had responded with anger. He said, this man is a good man, the one who'd made the mistake. He said, he has weaknesses. We all know that he has weaknesses, but he's a good man. He could be brought out of those weaknesses. But now you've humiliated him. You've given him no way to save face. And he's too proud. He's going to have no choice now but to have to run away from us. And in fact, he did. And it was such a tragic thing because it didn't have to happen. If we had only treated him with more real concern for his well-being and less concern for our self-righteous indignation.
Wow. That is truly wisdom.
And patience and faith. You know, faith in people, faith in God.
Yes. You spoke just now of the teaching center.
Uh-huh.
And my question is for anyone who may be listening and who may be interested and maybe too far away from Palo Alto, where the teaching center is. Do you share any of these teachings via the internet or some type of correspondence or anything
like
that?
Let me give a few names here. The organization, the group, the communities that Swami Kriyananda founded is called Ananda. It's A-N-A-N-D-A. If you go on the internet, ananda.org, you'll find our worldwide Ananda, and there's literally tens of thousands of pages of free books, videos, classes. My own, the center that my husband and I run, is called Ananda Palo Alto.
Right.
And if you go there, you'll find also many of my classes and Sunday messages, and we also give a great deal just free over the internet. It's such a magnificent way these days to be able to share everything. For the book itself, you can either go to Ananda, or we set up a simpler website called doorofmyheart.org, Door of My Heart. And if you go there, then you'll find, actually it's doorofmyheart.com, and you'll be able to find the book, Swami Kriyananda as We Have Known Him. You can order right off of that.
So one can receive some of his teachings via the internet.
Ananda.org, you can download Swami Kriyananda's books, you can listen to him talk, you can see him on video. We of course, have many things for sale, but we also have many, many things that we simply give away.
Could you repeat that?
Okay. It's Ananda, A-N-A-N-D-A, .org. Or to order my book, Swami Kriyananda, as we have known him, go to dooryourheart.com. Dooryourheart.com, all one big word.
I was just wondering, what is a regular day at the workshops? I mean, kind of an average regular day. Because I was thinking, well, what do you do when you sign up and join in to one of these workshops?
Okay, well, Ananda is a worldwide organization, and we have seven residential communities in the world, one in Italy, one in India, and five in the United States. And each of the, most of the communities, we have a huge living arrangement. In our community in Palo Alto, we have about 70 people live together in an apartment complex that we took over. We don't own it, but we lease the whole apartment complex, so we all live in apartments, but in one complex together. We also run a school for children, and we have a teaching center. We actually purchased what used to be a Catholic church, so we have a big temple and a teaching center. So most of the people who live in our community, about half of them work for an Ananda entity. We also have a metaphysical bookstore. This is just in Palo Alto, what I'm speaking of. About half the people who live here also work for one of the Ananda entities. They run the school, they run the teaching center, they run the bookstore. The others actually all work in whatever careers they were following before they became part of us. But we have a little temple, and we meditate together in the morning. Almost everyone has a daily meditation practice. We share dinners together during the week. Not everyone, but on a voluntary basis, people do. And so life looks pretty much like it looks to everybody else. But the difference is really simple. The way Swamiji put it once, he said quite simply, we put God first. The purpose of what we're doing is to change our own consciousness and to share that consciousness with others. Now, in the context of our teaching center, we have a huge program of evening classes and daytime meditations and Sunday morning celebrations. And in addition to this, this is an urban community. We have a rural community near Grass Valley where there's a retreat where people can come and stay and learn yoga, learn meditation, learn Kriya yoga specifically. And there we have 900 acres of land, and we have several hundred people. And we have basically a whole alternative culture going on. We have our businesses, we have our schools. You can live without leaving the property if you wish for pretty much an indefinite period of time. It's really quite an astonishing reality to step into. For 40 years we've been there. We celebrate our 40th anniversary next year, and you come into this atmosphere in which everyone is practicing these spiritual teachings, this attitude of the divine within and the capacity to experience and to serve God. And it's an atmosphere that you literally can't imagine until you step into it.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it sure does. Sounds wonderful.
Well, it's quite, it's not exactly a secret, but it's not as well known as I think it will be. It's a little bit ahead of its time. But this is what Swami Kriyananda has contributed. He's really created a practical way to embrace these teachings on a full-time basis.
Yes. And, from my point of view, anyway, when you have like-minded people around, it is so much easier to follow the path because you have that support.
Oh, very much so.
When you're out in the other world,
right.
you're faced with so much of the other types of dogma that come about that it really it's a strength of will. That is when you really have to have disciplined will to allow you to survive.
People can argue that you ought to give yourself the hardest possible test. Well, the fact of the matter is you can't hide from life, and even in the midst of our communities, we're not insular. We're very interactive with the world around us. But when you have a solid base, it's just like having a good relationship, a good family.
Oh, yeah.
You have a solid base of like-minded souls. in this society at this time, where everything is so materialistic and there's so much conflict and so much misunderstanding, there's this enormous movement toward higher consciousness and a deeper understanding, but there's a counterforce too. And it just behooves those of us who are like-minded, and I mean, that's why I'm talking to you all on the phone. You know, we're all on the same page with this, and we all have to work together to help each other and to make a real statement that the world will notice for the sake of those who would be in tune. It's not that I'm out to convert anyone. Swami Kriyananda puts it, he said, I'm only here to convert you to your own self. Just to awaken within people hope that there is a way to live by high ideals. And we don't have to feel that we have to hide our light under a bushel or that there's no hope in this world. There's a great deal of hope. But sometimes we need to hold hands a little bit to keep it alive.
Right. Yes. Yes.
It's so easy to forget when you're out among the world, you know. That's the thing, I think.
Well, these are very discouraging times that we live in.
Yeah.
You know, there's a great deal of, what I have to say, almost as insoluble conflict. But the answer is consciousness. If there's I remember one of the stories in this book here, these people came to Swamiji and they presented to him, they wanted him to sign on to an anti-nuclear pact or something like that. I think in America there was, in California there was an initiative. And they presented to him this extremely frightening picture of what would happen if an atom bomb, a nuclear bomb, dropped on an American city, and they had all these statistics of who would be killed and who would be vaporized and who would be burned. I mean, it was gruesome. And when they finally stopped and Swami had a moment to speak, he said, he approved of their principle, which is who is not in favor of peace, but he didn't approve of fear as a tactic. He said, you know, if you just frighten people, he said, you're just increasing the consciousness you're trying to stop. He said, I support your sincerity. He said, but the only answer to this is consciousness. He said, if people want to fight, they'll pick up stones. He said, what you have to change is people's understanding of their own reality. He said, we're very, very politically active, even though we're not political in the way people normally think, because we're changing consciousness by teaching people to meditate, by teaching them to understand the truth of their own nature. And the same with ecology problems. When people came and spoke to him, and I don't misunderstand me, I mean, we recycle and we do everything we can as well as everyone else, but it's all a problem of consciousness. It's not that these problems can't be solved, it's that there's no will to solve them. And that's a matter of consciousness. But you all, the work you're doing, the work we're doing, the work that, thank God, countless others are doing, that's what's going to make the change.
Yes, yes. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
It's the change of consciousness that will bring a change into,
yes, exactly.
Into the realities.
Yes, and we're, you know, goodness wins in the end. There is a divine beneficence that will win in the end. How much we will suffer as we go, we don't know. But
yes.
What matters is what we become.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's getting close to that time when we will need to be closing.
Okay.
So I would like to say thank you very much indeed for getting in touch with us and for being on this show. It's an honor to speak with you.
Oh, Angela, thank you. Yeah.
And to hear your views and to understand and to know a little bit about what is going on and how these teachings are being handed down, how we are all sharing in the expansion of consciousness for each other, for the oneness of love that we are. And it's only through, you said earlier on, the dedicated will, I believe you express a disciplined will, and I like that terminology, disciplined will, because too often I believe that people shy away. They don't want to be different to others, and they believe and so much in criticism rather than in wanting to go within the depths of themselves to find that true self, which I believe is what is termed self-realization. When we get to that true self, we can really understand the greater truth. But this cannot just come about by hearing another speak. Yes, the consciousness or the essence of that consciousness definitely will affect us, but again, by the disciplined will that one chooses to embrace and to encounter and to put forth, in my estimation, is what will allow us to become whoever it is we are choosing to become, or to become that, or to get in touch with that enlightened part of us, that part of us that is already enlightened and that we have just forgotten about.
Exactly. Very well stated, Angela. It's been lovely to talk with you and you, LaVon. I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you and with others these teachings.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And again, if there's anything that we can do to assist and share again, it will be our pleasure to do so. I think it's important for us to assist collectively in bringing the awareness of what is available to many others. And I know I have been on the website and have seen some of the books that Kriyananda has just written or was in the process of writing, and there are a couple of them that I think would be really worthwhile for my library. I love to pick up books and read, and I just love reading, and especially when you know that it's coming from someone who is so deeply connected.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
From what I have read, he felt that he was getting in touch with the energies that he had been, and I don't remember the books right now, but I know that they will be on your website for anyone who may be interested.
Right, exactly.
So I really applaud that, and I look forward to maybe one day having the ability to receive and enjoy those teachings. And thank you once again for sharing your time, and all the best to you. Many, many blessings for your programs that you're running, for the teachings that you're sharing, for the communities that you have towards this. Thank you very much.
Well, God bless you. God bless you.
Many blessings to you too. We are sharing today with Asha Pawar. I think it's really wonderful what she has been saying. And LaVon, I would like to say thanks to you for being on the show with us and for asking these questions. I know that you have not really been exposed very much to these different teachings, have you?
No, I haven't. But the first book I ever read when I was realizing there was more to this was the autobiography book that you talked about.
Oh, great. Okay.
And I remember reading that, and quite different, but I was open finally.
So good.
It's
interesting
how I found a disciple, being able to talk to a disciple of that individual.
Yeah. And I think this is what we need, We really need to be able to find out from someone else who has already been on that path,
mm-hmm.
who can share that wisdom with us. And, there's so much wisdom coming from Asha. It really was a joy for her to be able to even, mm-hmm. Speak the way she speaks about Kriyananda. Means that she has had that wisdom developed within her. Otherwise, she would not be able to speak of it so eloquently. And wow, this has been a wonderful hour. It has gone by rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had any callers, but we know that you're there and you have heard what is being said. And if not today, I know that many others will tune in and be able to listen, because this is such an excellent setup. We can listen as it's being done live, or we can just tune in and get it on the recordings. So I would like to say thank you very much on behalf of Reverend Cherise Thorne and Reverend LaVon Felaba for allowing me to speak and to fill in for Reverend Cherise. Knowing spirit through healing your soul is a book written based on experiences. Well, these are the experiences that Reverend Cherise has had to go through, because she also felt disempowered. She also felt alone. She also felt rather unhappy in periods of her life, and decided that there had to be a better way to live, and searched. And through her searching, this knowledge came about for her. She was able to tap into this knowledge. She found ways of filling in the questionnaire, and it worked for me too, for many years. And even now, if something comes up, I am able to go back and find out what the trigger is, what needs to be cleared, because it's through clearing your soul, healing your soul, purifying the soul, that we can get back and really touch and get to know that pure, untarnished, true self, that self that is the nature of the divine. That is the only way that we can get in touch, by eliminating, clearing all the illusions, all the dogmas that have been handed down to us, you know, by the different religions, our families, our cultures, etc. And you know about that too, Levon, right?
Yes, I do.
Yes, yeah. And only by clearing those things as they come about. And we have been so blessed, you know, the universe has given us so many different ways that we can get in touch and, you know, have mirrors for the things that we need to heal. And so it's just a constant blessing that we are being given all the time to view ourselves, to see ourselves, and to then question, what do we like about ourselves? Is it something that we would like to keep and get to know more about, or do we need to change something within us that will bring us into greater peace and harmony with what is out there? With greater peace and harmony with the divine spirit, with the divine essence of who we are. Knowing spirit has been a blessing to me. As I said, you know, I was not very interested in all the different levels of consciousness. I just wanted to find peace and happiness and couldn't understand why I couldn't find happiness. And that book that was channeled to me, The Rite of Passage, I read it sometimes and I wonder at how brazen I was, because everyone around me thought that I was nuts, you know, for believing in this inner voice that was giving me all of these messages. But I am so grateful I held on to what I believe to be true for me. And it certainly brought me into a greater sense of knowingness, a greater understanding. And I look back now and realize that, yes, I really was very depressed, even though I didn't want to accept it. But through that, then the teachings evolved. And I am really pleased to be able to share that as well with others. It is getting pretty close to our closing time. So once again, I would like to say thank you, Levon, for all of the work that you're doing on behalf of the oneness of love that we are.
Thank you.
And thanks to all others out there, all other aspects of ourselves, because we are really one in divine love. And all of those aspects who are doing their share in bringing healing to the universe, bringing healing to our brothers and sisters. So keep up the good work. And I hope that we will get together soon again and be able to share our teachings with others. Not that it is the most important teaching or that it is the only truth, but that it is a truth for those who may be interested in sharing it and in understanding. I know that we will be able to get together again. And when we do, we will be filled with the divine love that we are truly are, that we can share with others. As we have heard from Asha, that the consciousness of who we are touches those around us in many, many amazing ways. And I hope that we will continue to do that.